Very welcome to Stockholm. I'm Bo Demet, the digital country manager in Sweden. We are very pleased to host this DVN with our CEO, Bob Palmer. A special welcome to Bob Palmer. We are in an old cable factory, but I believe we have more cables in this building today. With the use of our modern technologies, we have also here created a very modern office of the future. You are all very welcome.
Hi, my name is Carina Hardsjö. In this coming GVN, I would like Mr. Palmer to talk about the motivation. The motivation for the large group of people who hasn't had a salary increase in years, don't have bonuses and development programs. I'd like to know the reason for us that we should want to stay in digital, despite the fact that we are fewer now and have to put in a lot more overtime to get a job done.
My name is Johan Hedman. My main concern is the chosen centralistic model in digital versus a delegated decision model with a local profitability focus.
What I'd like Mr. Palmer to address is his view on digital as a vendor of SI project to our large accounts. As I see it today, we are losing a lot of competence, especially from digital consulting, competence not being replaced. And if we are to be a credible partner in that marketplace, I think we need a critical mass of our own resources and delivering capabilities.
My name is Roland Lindqvist. I work as account manager for ABB here in Sweden. This year, due to the rapid changes within digital, I'm faced with a lot of new challenges. I would like to ask Mr. Palmer how he envisions the role of the account manager and what our added value will be in the future.
Well, I'm very pleased to be here in Stockholm today for your worldwide DVN. We're right here in the office of the future, and it's an especially appropriate site, in my view, for today's employee forum. We're going to be talking about the efforts that we've been making to turn this company around, and also more about the future and where we're going. The issues that were raised here in the tape and that are going to be raised in the questions are key to the future success of our company. Employee motivation, how we're going to manage the decision process in the company to get the right balance of local decision-making as well as global perspective, what businesses we're going to be in and how we're going to focus our investments to ensure that we're a leader in those businesses, how we're going to keep the key talent that we need for systems integration and support of our largest accounts. All of these things are essential issues that we'll be discussing today. After a few prepared remarks, I want to invite your direct questions, and we'll be having a good dialogue here, hopefully. Last couple of years we've been focused a lot internally on trying to get our cost structure in line and our organizational structure such that we could make decisions more rapidly. We also need to be talking a little beyond the current problems and looking to the future. So we're going to do both of those today. With respect to the last couple of years, during which time I've been privileged to be the Chief Executive Officer of Digital, we've been working on what's mostly on your minds around cost reductions in order to get our cost structure in line with the realities of this marketplace. In just 2 years, we've taken $1.3 billion annualized expenses out of our company. In July, we announced a program that will take an additional $1.8 billion out of the company in just over a year. So over a three-year period of time, we will have removed $3 billion of annual expenses. At that time, the company will have a very competitive cost structure when compared to the companies that are similar to digital in terms of the products and services that we offer. This is driven by market realities and the advent of open systems, the PC revolution, and the reason it's so painful for our company as compared to other companies is that we waited too long to get started. even after we understood what was happening with the PC revolution, with open systems, we were very reluctant in management to deal with that. And the longer you put off taking your medicine, the more difficult it is and the more bitter it is. But in my own view, we're at least halfway through this transformation and probably a little better than halfway through. It's not easy to turn an enterprise around the size of digital equipment that had gotten into so much difficulty. But with all of your hard work and all of the support of digital employees around the world, we're making excellent progress. The market realities demand that we do continue to remove these expenses, particularly in our sales, general, and administrative overhead areas, and we have to work on our gross margins. If you looked at our results in the fourth quarter of last year, had we had the previous year's gross margins, we would at least have broken even. You look at what happened to the gross margins, it's a function of three things at least. One is the changing mix in our business, selling fewer of the really large systems and more small systems. Another is the way that we design our products. We need to design our products at the outset for modularity, for manufacturability, for low cost, as opposed to a collection of low volume, unique designs. We have to design for high volume, repeatable designs, upgradable designs, such as our 2100 series server exemplifies the new way of designing products at Digital for ease of manufacturing. And we have to fix our manufacturing. We started on this a few years ago. We've made great progress, but we have more work to do. So we have to fix design, fix manufacturing, fix logistics, and reduce the cost in sales, general, and administrative. To do that, here in Europe, we're already embarked on our go-to-market model, a different model that's more in line with market realities and is much closer to the model that our largest competitors utilize. It relies on the use of partners and indirect channels, which are absolutely essential to the turnaround of digital equipment. In the last couple of years, we've tried a number of different organizational structures. Some of these have worked very well, like in our storage group, our PC group, our systems integration worked well. In terms of a semiconductor, it worked very well. In terms of our core business unit, didn't work well. At the fourth quarter of last year, it happens that five of our six business units were either profitable or break even. Five out of six. But the core systems business unit was quite unprofitable and drug down the whole company, as you know. That's why we took that large restructuring reserve. One thing I want to mention about the restructuring reserve is even after having taken that large restructuring reserve so that we can continue the cost reductions in our company, even after that, Digital has one of the strongest balance sheets of industrialized companies in the world. In fact, in the United States, if you look at the 50 largest industrialized companies, Digital has the number 8 strongest balance sheet. We had, at the end of the fourth quarter, $1 billion in cash on hand, a little over, 1.2 actually, against $1 billion of debt. So we had plenty of liquidity and low debt. Quite clearly, we can turn the company around. We have the financial resources to do so, but it is important to return to profitability as soon as we can. We're talking about the restructuring of the company and the models that worked and didn't work. The core business unit didn't work primarily, in my view, because of matrix management and functional organization within Digital. And what happened is when you had functional engineering, functional manufacturing, functional sales and marketing, and a lot of infrastructure between these functions and the territories in which we do business in order to communicate and make everything kind of work, there's just far too much overhead, far too many opportunities to say no to something, and far too many opportunities to delay a response to the marketplace. So the issues are not only a cost, but they also have to do with our responsiveness to what our customers want from digital equipment. It has also to do with getting the market input from you so that we can design the products to address issues that customers really care about. In the functional organization that we had, we didn't have enough connection between the people that design our products and services and the customers themselves. The new organization corrects that. It eliminates matrix management to a 95% approximation. It makes the line organization completely responsible for the market demand, the attributes of the products and services, their design, their manufacturing, their distribution, the sales and marketing of those products and services, and gives the manager responsible complete control over his P&L. Not only the control of the revenue, the cost, the profit, but for the first time in Digital's history, all of the assets employed, the cash, the people, the inventory, a complete business model. And of course, and you can see in that business model, it's quite clear who is accountable. It's very easy for me in my job function to know which managers are doing well and to reward those by promotion, as we've done recently, and it also to know which ones need more help in order to be successful. In the functional matrix management system, it's almost impossible to tell who is responsible or what is wrong when things are not working. So we're building on the successes that we had in our PC organization, our storage organization, promoting those vice presidents to division status, reorganizing, as you know, so that we take advantage of that clarity of responsibility. It's interesting that as strong as the company is financially, and as good as our technology is, in the press, there's been a lot of negative hyperbole. That means an exaggeration of the negative about Digital. It was caused mostly by the very unfortunate loss we had in Q3 of last year because it was a surprise. It was a surprise to the management, and it was a surprise to the financial analysts that follow our company. Because of that very negative financial result, many customers are concerned about Digital's financial viability. That's why it's so important that we return to profitability from operations as soon as possible. It's to reassure our customers that Digital is going to be here for the long term, and they can buy our technology solely on the basis of, is it the best technology, is it the best service for the problem they're trying to solve? I've had people tell me that even though their engineers or their business leaders had made the decision to go with Digital because it is the best technology, maybe the chief financial officer was reluctant to sign the purchase order. So we have to fix that problem. My assessment of the importance of fixing that problem is that it is our number one issue. Because it's our number one issue, I imposed a salary freeze on all employees worldwide, with the exception of a few countries that have excessively high inflation. That was my decision personally, so you can't blame it on anybody else. I'm totally responsible. And again, the reason was because I think it's so important to our customers that we become profitable as soon as possible. Now, I would like to lift that salary freeze as soon as I can. And what I would like to do is, if I can see that we're going to achieve our objective of being profitable from operations in Q2, as soon as I can be comfortable that we can do that, I'm going to lift that salary freeze. It's quite possible that we'll begin to do some salary planning in the second quarter for implementation in the third quarter. That would be my reasonable expectation. If we do better than we're currently doing, we might be able to do that even sooner. So you can be quite sure that what I would like to do is lift that salary freeze, but I cannot afford to do that until I see that we can return to profitability so we can stabilize those customers and get those orders that might be being held back from us because of concern about financial viability. Now, along that line, you can be very effective in explaining to our customers, and explaining to your friends and associates, and explaining to your colleagues in competitive companies what the true reality is around our company. The fact that we are still among the strongest in balance sheet, liquidity, and clearly the strongest in technology and service. We need to have a positive attitude. We need to be confident. And we need to exude that confidence when we talk to our customers, because there's tremendous reason to have it. We've been doing all of these things, and sometimes it looks a little messy to you. I try to make a metaphor maybe that would help you understand and maybe help your customers understand why it seems so messy. If you imagine that we had a very strong foundation, and we built the building on that strong foundation in the 1970s and 80s, but unfortunately, because of the changes in our environment, that structure was not stable. The job function for the new management is to deconstruct a building that was in danger of falling down and simultaneously construct a new, stronger building on the same strong foundation. And that's what we've been doing. But you have to do it simultaneously. And so it's very messy. The people are in place. You're taking down the old building. You're building a new building. The foundation is sound. But halfway through the process, looks messy. It is messy. There is no alternative unless you just want the building to collapse. And that's not what we're going to do. We're going to construct a structure that will be sound and carry us on until the next century. That's what we're doing. Now, if you look at most recently, what are some positives? Well, for one thing, you probably saw we had a growth in our order rate, our product order rate and services for two quarters in a row, growth over the previous, the same quarter of the previous year. That's the first time in 5 years. So for the last 5 years, we hadn't had two quarters in a row with order growth, but we just did. In addition to that, our stock last month moved up about 30% in 1 month. That's a very dramatic move. In general, the market was doing kind of ups and downs. Technology stocks were up a little bit, but digital moved up 30%. What this means is that some very astute analysts, looking at the changes we made in July, looking at those changes, listening to management, talking to customers to see how do the customers really think of our technology? What about our people? What about our products and services? They take all of that data in, and then they make some investment decisions that begins to move the stock. I'd like to show you a little video that ran on CNBC in the United States about one investor who made a very substantial bet with his own money on digital equipment stock very recently.
This is CNBC. Dan Dorfman turns a new card on deck. Is digital ready to run? Digital equipment was up today in a down market. The stock got a boost earlier from our financial correspondent Dan Dorfman. In his report, Dan said he had learned that one of the smartest and most successful investors around personally bought 2 million shares of the company's stock over the past few months. And Dan's here now with an update. Hi, Dan.
How you doing, Dean? And that investor is a fellow named Joseph Roche from the West Coast. Very successful guy. Let's get to the background and see what Roche is all about. First, we see the all-time high on digital equipment, almost 200, 52-week range. Today's close, up 1.25. It's the third largest computer maker, one of the world's largest producers of network computer systems. Fiscal 94 sales, that's for the year ended this past June, $13.4 billion. Fiscal 94 loss, $2.1 billion. The company, by the way, has had three consecutive years of losses. Now, Roche wouldn't comment directly. I spoke to some people who know him, and this is why he's gung-ho on the stock. First, it's worth pointing out, he personally bought 2 million shares over the past few months, spent about $50 million. He's also made killings in Unisys Preferred stock, National Data, Bethlehem Steel, and loads of others. Why is he so bullish? Number one, big demand for client Saver 2100 computer. It's the leading product for distributed computing, meaning you distribute the power of computing throughout a network rather than residing in a mainframe computer. Roche, I'm told, sees huge potential. A big demand for the Alpha AXP processor. The company spent over $1 billion alone on the manufacturing facilities. It's a 64-bit processor, which opens the gateway to such leading cutting edges, that's cutting edge services as video on demand and interactive TV. Roche, I'm told, thinks the processor will be expandable for the next 18 to 20 years. The company has also purified the asset base by selling off non-strategic assets. Roche also thinks management's on the ball. It's doing the right things to turn things around, and it's not succumbing to Wall Street's demand for the quick fix. Key question, of course, what about the bottom line? What about the numbers? Well, Roche, I'm told, sees rising cash flow, $7 a share for the fiscal year ending June of 95, 12 the year after, sharply rising sales, $14.5 billion next year, $18 billion in the year after that. What about the bottom line? Ballooning earnings forecast. Fully taxed, he looks for earnings of 50 cents a share in the current year, $3 next, and $6 the year after that. The book value, a hard 21 bucks a share. That's after all write-offs. Roche's 12-month target, 50 bucks a share, more than a double from current levels, when he really thinks it's one of the great turnaround stories on Wall Street. Keep in mind, it's one man's opinion, but one man who's betting $50 million that he's right. By the way, Dean, $50 million, that's your kind of investment speed, isn't it?
Not a bad bet, Dan. Thanks. Dan Dorfman in New York.
After I saw this television clip, actually it played the day of my board of directors meeting, and you can, after I came back from the board, I turned on the television and saw this thing. I was feeling, yes, you know, we're making some progress. You know, after that happened, I had a phone call from Joseph Harosh, and we talked for about an hour. It was really quite interesting because he's a person that started out with very modest means. He only invests his own money, and he's built up from very modest means to a personal portfolio of several hundred million dollars. And his entire career, it's been about 25 years, he told me, all he's invested in are turnaround stocks over the entire time. And he knew as much about the company as we do. I mean, he had studied everything. And you think about it, if you were going to put $50 million of your own money, it's one thing to bet $50 million in a mutual fund, somebody else's money. But $50 million of your own money, if you're so fortunate to have it, would be, you'd get some information about that investment. When I talked to him, it was very encouraging because he's so confident. And having looked at other turnarounds and looking at our company and knowing that we have the technology and the people and the loyal customers to be successful. And that's why I say we have to overcome this perception because it's kind of messy midway through the construction-deconstruction process. Now, in terms of technology and looking to the future, it's quite important that we all understand what we're trying to be. You know, digital has not had a history in the past of being clear about what our strategy was. And in fact, in the 1980s, you know, I've been in the company 9 years, and in the 1980s, the strategy was sort of that we would do everything for everybody, everywhere, all the time. And you can't. The resources just do not exist to do all of that. And the customers are very confused because there were so many different points of view in digital about what we were trying to do. For the last year, we've been quite consistent saying what we want to do. That we intend to be the leader in implementing open client server computing, in designing, installing, and supporting and servicing that implementation of distributed computing. We have a lot of different ways of saying it. It's a very credible proposition when I talk to our customers. It builds on our strengths around networking. Digital largely invented distributed computing, networking. The idea that we will build on our networking background is our foundation. And the new building that we'll build on that will primarily then be concerned about delivering three things. Delivers networked computing platforms, network integration software, the frameworks and middleware that make it possible to integrate applications onto the network, and network services. Network integration services, systems integration services, and support on a worldwide basis. This is a problem that customers are trying to solve. In the 1980s, when we were so successful, the reason we were successful is that is exactly the problem we were solving for customers. But we were solving it in a homogeneous environment, an environment where every element was engineered and manufactured by digital. So it was easier to do. That is, we had DECnet, we had VMS, we had VAX, and it was all the same. And we implemented distributed computing, very successful. In the 1990s, there's almost no large customer that doesn't have equipment, operating systems, applications, you name it, from a variety of customers, a variety of vendors. And the issue is, they want this stuff to work together. They want it to work together. They want the applications to be accessible on the desktop. They want the data to be readily available in the format that can be utilized by their employees, and they can't do it smoothly today. There are very few companies in the world that have the technical capability, the support capability, and the strategy to deliver that. That is our message. That is what we are going to do. We are going to make it possible to implement distributed computing, client-server implementation, if you prefer that term, in heterogeneous environments better than anyone else, and we're going to support that after the fact. And we have the technology to do that. We have absolutely leadership technology. You know, last week I had the good opportunity to introduce our newest family member of the Alpha microprocessors. And you know those microprocessors, after you bring out a chip, within a few months, 6 to 9 months typically, they start showing up in our systems. Today we're shipping systems that have 275 megahertz 21064A chips. Until the new chip, that was the world's fastest microprocessor, faster than any processor from any competitor. Just in the near term, some of our server products are going to be updated with that chip. We introduced them last week, the newest family member, and it became the new standard. So we now have both the fastest chip and the second fastest chip. The new 21164 has 9.3 million transistors in it, three times as many as a Pentium chip. It runs at 300 megahertz. It issues 4 instructions per second, and it is the first microprocessor in the world to do a peak performance of over 1 billion instructions per second. BIPS, not MIPS, 1.2 billion instructions per second. There was a microprocessor report in the United States that's about to be published where the author, who is a student of all microprocessors, said that it is virtually unprecedented in the semiconductor industry for any vendor to have a microprocessor that's three times faster than any competitor. Unprecedented. In my whole career, I've never seen that big a gap in performance between the leader and next best. That'll be in our system soon. The message for your customer is, when you buy into the Alpha AXP architecture today, you are quite assured that you will stay at leadership, absolute performance, and leadership price performance over the coming decade. We do not see any change in that architecture for the next 20 years because it was designed to scale exactly as semiconductor photolithography dimensions get smaller. It just gets faster and more powerful. The other RISC architectures, the first generation designs, do not have that attribute. Alpha is a second generation RISC design that scales directly with semiconductor progress. It's quite predictable what we will have, and I am quite confident that our performance advantage will increase every year relative to those of our competitors that do not have such a scalable architecture, which includes today all of them. Now, I want to take some time to answer these questions. There's a lot more we have to do, but this work is beginning to pay off. I've seen a few analysts start writing positive things about digital. When you go in to see those customers, when you talk to each other, when you talk to your friends and associates, you want to focus on the very positive things we've done. Yes, it's painful to do this downsizing. It's absolutely painful, made more painful because we had to wait so long to get started. You know, the last 2 years, we've reduced the employee population in our company worldwide by 25%, but we're making four times as many computers. Four times as many computers, 25% fewer people. This year will be the last year, I hope, that we will have to do any restructuring in our company. And it can be if we all work together as a team, build on this very strong technology, build on this customer confidence and trust in Digital Equipment Corporation, work together in the new organizational structure that reflects market realities to be successful. I'm personally extremely confident that with your support, we will be successful. We will return to profitability this fiscal year, and I hope, I'm optimistic, that we will return to profitability from operations in the second quarter. Thank you very much. Now, I'd like to take your questions, and the kind of questions I prefer, easy ones, but unfortunately, the ones that I got were pretty difficult questions. And I'd like to answer those, so I have them written down here that appeared on the video that was the lead-in to this DVN, and then we'll take your questions from the audience. The first question I want to remind you about had to do with motivation, that people were feeling unmotivated, and it's understandable when you're going through this much of a transition. Hopefully, if you'll focus on the content of my remarks here, and you really think about the extraordinary technology and talent we have in this company, the opportunity we have to to take a great company that had fallen into disrepute somewhat and certainly into dismal financial performance and turn that around. That is an opportunity to be part of something that comes along very rarely in your career. In my career, I can't tell you how excited I was to have this opportunity. To work all your life in technology and have the opportunity to be part of one of the world's most spectacular turnarounds. As we achieve this turnaround, it will go down in history as one of the most spectacular. You can be part of that, and yes, it's difficult. And when you look back on it and you say, there were tough times in there. We didn't have raises for a while. We didn't have the benefits that we were entitled to for a while. We all pulled together and we saved the company. And the emphasis is on the we. No one person can do this. Sometimes I had the impression early in my job that people were waiting for me to come out of my office with some tablet that had all the answers on it and just say, there it is, there's the answer, and everybody can go back to the easy times we had in the 1980s when the computer industry was much different, when you could raise your prices because you had proprietary operating system lock-ins and all of those wonderful things. That is never coming back. There is no magic bullet, and we don't need one. We don't need magic. We need execution. We need determination. We need to just work together as a team because we have the technology foundation to be successful. And from my perspective and my background, it doesn't get any better than that. It doesn't get any better. Right now, yes, it's difficult. But that would be my reason for staying with this company. And I would suggest to you, those of you that are thinking about it, think about that opportunity. Anybody can leave, and you can leave at any time. You can leave in the future if it doesn't work out. But if you stay and you're part of the turnaround, it will be a lifetime experience. And I guarantee you, as we return to profitability, we will have raises. We will have increased benefits. We will begin to share as we provide a return for our investors. But until we provide a return for our shareholders, we are not entitled to additional benefits. That's the way it works. We need to return something to the shareholders that finance this company, and then we can share in the profits that ensue. As you probably know from previous DVNs, my interest in life is having a meritocracy, an environment where people that perform get rewarded. That's my objective, to have an environment where if you work hard and you're successful, you are rewarded both by recognition, by additional investment in your career, by additional training opportunities, and by financial reward. That's what we will put in place as we return to profitability. Another question here has a concern about the centralist model versus a completely decentralized model. What we're trying to achieve is a balance. Because we are a global company doing business in 100 countries, we have in our top 1,000 accounts many global companies or companies that, if not global today, intend to go global in the future. We need to be able to look at those companies on a global accounts basis, organize ourselves by those accounts. That's the way the customers want us to think about their business and bring our resources to support them in that global fashion. That means you have to have some structure around the global nature of the business, which is the important reason for forming the accounts business unit, which is our principal way to reach our top 1,000 accounts and to expose them to all of the technology and services that we provide. That balance, at the same time, has to recognize reality. Here in Sweden, local management knows more what's appropriate for this environment than we do in Maynard. And so the important thing is to strike balance between the territories, the countries in which we do business, and the business unit management on a global basis. And I'm quite confident we can do that. But when we have a balance or when we have a disagreement, it still has to be quite clear. There can't be five people responsible like we had in the past. At the end of the day, the vice president in charge of that business unit or that division has to make the decision. And sometimes the decisions will be popular and sometimes not. But they will be made, and we will not be locked into this interminable debate without being decisive and moving forward. So balance is the issue there. Another question talks about the SI capability that digital has and the fact that we're losing some talent. We are losing some of our SI talent. We're losing talent in a number of our areas of the company. We need to rebuild that talent. And it's not all about layoffs. It's also about hiring new people, and we are hiring new people. On a global basis, we're attracting a lot of new talent from in some cases, from our leading competitors, in other cases, right out of the universities. It's very important for the health of the company that we not lose sight of the fact that we need to hire new talent as well as maintain an investment in the talent that we have in our company. So you have to do both additional training for the people that have been here and understand our business, hire some new talent coming out of the universities with new ideas that kind of shake up the status quo, you know, and take advantage of the experience some people have had in other companies, get them to come to our company, and they are coming. And sadly, we're losing some of our people. But it's quite important that we have an affordable mass of really top-notch network integration and systems integration specialists. It is the heart of our value proposition to customers. So you can be quite sure we're going to continue to invest in that area. Finally, there's a question here from the account manager for ABB in Sweden. And he asks what the role of the account manager is. The account manager has one of the most important roles, if not the most important role, in all of Digital Equipment Corporation. For the customers, particularly the 1,000 accounts that we are focused on, the account manager is digital. That is the person that the customer looks to provide all of the services, all of the technology that we bring to bear on that customer's problem. And also, not to wait to be asked, but the account manager should be coming very familiar with that account, with the challenges that are coming in that industry, understanding what would be the opportunities to be proactive, to get out in front of a perceived need for the customer, and to propose solutions from digital in advance of the customers recognizing that need. We used to do that, and we can do that again. We have the technology, we can deliver on our commitments, and it is important that when we make a commitment, that we meet that commitment, whatever it takes. Whatever it takes, we have to pull together and meet that commitment. It's quite important. Digital has loyal customers that trust us, and that trust was hard to earn. And I'm quite intent that we maintain it and support it. But when I say do whatever it takes, we have to do it profitably. And that's the difference. If you look at Digital's gross margins relative to those of our competitors, we are giving up on the average on products around 10 percentage points. On the billions of dollars of revenue that we have, that is most of the reason for our losses. Coming back to the account manager then is the general manager for the account on a global basis. And those global account managers have the top level positions in our company. And they will be the ones that most often reflect digital to the customer. Now hopefully that was clear enough, but if not, I'll take additional questions on that subject. Those are the questions that I was presented this morning in the video, and I'm quite prepared now to take any questions that you might have about anything that I said in my speech today, any question that I answered that you think was not clear, or any other question on your mind whatsoever. Thank you.
Bob, you earlier referred to the rebuilding mess that we are all part of. Rebuilding also, the people involved, the builders, need to see the structure. Where is it going? In the last 3 years, we have had changes in the rules for the gross margin out in the field. And this makes it very difficult for us in finance to analyze. We have to spend too much time exploring how things are linked together, etc. And instead of analyzing and making the suggestions on where to move, what products to emphasize on. Could you ensure that in the future we have some basics in the P&L? We've been moving a lot of expenses up and down, above and below gross margin as well, for MCS, for example. Mm-hmm. We need some basic stability in that area.
Yes, I will. I think you have an excellent point. That's a very good question. The question relates to a number of topics. One is the need for stability in the organization in order to have time to learn how to manage within that framework. And certainly in the turmoil we had in the last couple of years, part of it's my fault, clearly, because trying to find a model that would work in our culture, in our environment, because the one we had wasn't working, and you have to try a few things to see what works. As I mentioned, we tried the CBU structure, and we did organize by industry, and we tried structures that were more vertically aligned like our PC organization. On the one hand, the PC organization grew by more than 100% per year with excellent products, and particularly in the European theater, we were growing very rapidly, and here in Sweden by more than that, by ahead of the average, tremendous growth, but clear lines of authority, clear decisiveness, and a clear product strategy on when you bring the product out, how you introduce it, what the margins are, and an ability to react to changes in the marketplace quickly. And in the case of the PC business unit, no allocations. You didn't have all these allocations for a first approximation coming in from the outside. You had your own engineering, manufacturing, distribution, partners, relationships, and of course partners are extremely important. How you negotiate with those partners, what are the terms and conditions? Who are they? And so that worked. The CBU structure didn't work. It was a good attempt to maintain the culture that we had, functional and matrix, and try to put a structure in place that could work, but it doesn't work. And after that third quarter, it was quite clear to me, as I was out jogging one day, it came to me that the problem here, the fundamental problem, is this functional matrix culture that we have is not going to be agile enough for the 1990s, and it is not affordable. And it leads to the kind of thing you were just mentioning, because with all of that functional business and matrixy business, most of the arguments were about how to allocate internal stuff, which is of no value to customers whatsoever. Has no value to the customer, our internal discussions about whether this is above or below the line. No value. So, the new model gets rid of all that nonsense and puts in line of the P&L for the business unit a very clean, traditional business P&L. Now, another piece that was in your question had to do with the pricing and the gross margin control. This got away from us in the last year as we made changes to that CBU structure, and it was a mistake. We did much of that damage to ourselves. I am clearly responsible. There's no attempt on my part to duck this responsibility, and I'd suggest that your area of responsibility, you accept it as well. So some of my ideas have worked out, some have not, and that's to be expected. But what I will not stand by for is not deciding and moving on. Or when you see that you've made a mistake, correct it, which is what we're doing today. This is a learning process and a development process. And in the real world, you don't know the future. In a real world, you can't run all the experiments in your brain. You have to do something. And that's why we're moving ahead. But because the models that we've referred to in our PC and components and peripherals and semiconductor and storage work so well, I'm very confident that model will work well when it's applied to our computer systems division. And we're taking someone, in the case of Enrico Pessatori, who was very successful in implementing that model. Now, the other piece of your question, which is very, very serious, is that we don't have the systems in place in our company. It's amazing, isn't it? We're a computer company. We don't have the systems to manage a business in a professional manner. I think what happened is that, like many of our problems, the 1980s were so successful, we made so much money, that it wasn't that important who got the credit or didn't, so you didn't have to know who was accountable. And it wasn't that important where the expenses went because there was so much money we could afford it. And we had a lot of bad habits. We got sort of used to having that tremendous cash flow, that $1 billion profitability. And if you think back on it, those of you that have been here as long as I have, we squandered a lot of that money. We misspent a lot of the money that belonged to somebody else. It's not our money. It belongs to our shareholders. We're not misspending it today. We're getting that under control. We have got to fix our systems. In terms of the top five things that we're working on, fixing our business systems and the information management and technology that supports that is in the top five. It may be number two, but it's in the top five. We cannot run businesses effectively without effective reporting. And you're quite right. Our focus needs to be not on internal, trying to shift allocations around, but externally to the marketplace, what do we need to do to go out there and aggressively win business against our competitors? That's a very good question. I hope the answer was satisfactory. Let me have another question, please.
Hello, Bob. My name is Sven Eriksson, and I'm working in sales and admin support. I have actually two questions, and the second one is the follow-on of the first one. I feel that the management are more determined than ever now to make the transition from direct sales to indirect sales to happen. What is your vision of that transition, and which are your checking goals that we have succeeded? And my following question is to that is that the whole order chain that we are working with today, I'm thinking of from IMNT perspective, is very complicated. We're, for example, running two parallel order systems. And if we're going to effectivize in this area, I think also the partners, at least the primary partners, should be able to also log orders directly to manufacturing and follow up what has happened with their orders, delivery times, and so on. What is your comment to that?
Let me answer the second question first, because it's quite similar to the previous question. And that is, again, to define the business processes that we need in order to have a competitive advantage. And the one you mentioned is a good example, and to put then the IMNT support to enable that business process. We have a team of people in digital working on that order admin business requirements, and a team working on the information management and technology to implement and support it. There are representatives from each business unit. It's being driven overall by Vin Malarkey, who's our chief financial officer, and supported by Bob McNulty, the chief information officer, who reports directly to me. This is a big deal. This has to be fixed. You know, many times you've seen that our salespeople have been said to be not efficient, not effective. Sometimes people have quoted me as saying that, as well as other people that analyze our company. It's true in terms of the amount of revenue we get per salesperson. That's not to say we don't have good salespeople. We have excellent salespeople. But as you point out, our tools are not good, so that the salespeople do not have the information that they need to compete. We need to have that information. That is management's responsibility, to make sure that our salespeople know what are our competitive strengths, how to answer the competition's misrepresentations about our products and services, and where their weak points are so that we can go after them. And then to have the rapid quoting and some configurations that make sense, so you don't have to do all of the work in the field in order to satisfy customer requirements. Every one of those things is essential for the business unit manager to be successful. Therefore, the pressure is on. In particular, in the case you mentioned, rolling out the transition to the indirect channels, the pressure is on within those business units to make sure that we do that without dropping the loyalty of our customer base. But now let's talk about the move to indirect. Digital is late in making that move. We used to debate this when I was at a different position in the company, still running semiconductor, in fact, that long ago. We debated that at the senior management levels of our company. Top management was totally opposed to indirect channels. At that time, Hewlett-Packard, Sun Microsystems, and many others began to use the partners that we turned our back on. That cost structure is far more efficient for reaching the jillions of small accounts. One reason for our losses, as you've seen before, is our overwhelmingly large sales, general, and administrative cost when compared to our competitors. They have been doing that for years to reach the position they're at. We don't have years. We have to do it now, and we have to get on with it. And we'll make a few mistakes. I'm sure I'm going to get email about this problem or that problem or somebody or this, but in the reality, we have to move, and we have to do it in a way that takes care of our customers. That means that the sales executives today that are calling on accounts that are too small to make the top 1,000 will be going to visit those accounts with the partner, introducing the partner, talking about how the customer will be supported in terms of through the partner and through telephone coverage in the appropriate territory and in the appropriate manner, from professional technology service centers to make sure that we can handle those accounts. We're not abandoning any accounts. Our objective is to provide better service to those accounts that are not in the top 1,000, provide better service through the use of multiple partners and through the support services that I've mentioned. We have to accomplish that. Here in Europe, about 20% of the accounts have already been transitioned. By the end of the calendar year, 80% will have been completed. This is a very difficult model. It's being led by Vincenzo Damiani. He's doing a good job driving that. He needs your full support. There is no alternative. And we have to make sure customers understand it and are comfortable with it. Now, I read recently in DataQuest that Hewlett-Packard has set a target for direct sales coverage in their accounts of a minimum of $3 million per year in revenue. I don't know if that's true, but that's what was printed in DataQuest, $3 million. If you look at our top 1,000 accounts, we're going well below that in order to not only achieve the accounts that today are big, but also to cover the strategic accounts that we hope will get big. And as you talk about the account management function, account manager is responsible on a global basis for increasing Digital's market share in that account. So whatever, there's some number that company is spending on information technology, and we have some market share. Whatever it is too little. What we want to do is grow it. And we need to, in order to grow it, to provide the account managers, the sales teams, the support teams with the information they need to combat the competition. But the other thing you've got to do, we need to shed somewhat the digital terminal humility approach. We go in too apologetic, too humble, and don't take on the competition. The competition comes at us aggressively, and we just kind of flinch. That's not my model. We need to be very direct. And to that end, I'm getting out speaking a lot more to customers, to DECUS forums, to the press, and sometimes I may say a few outrageous things. The things that I say, I believe. We have the best technology. It's nonsense to let some of our competitors get away with their claims. It's just nonsense. And we in digital, at the top and all the way through the company, need to challenge those assertions. I'll give you a good example. It is nonsense for Hewlett-Packard to say that they are going to take their customers from a 32-bit architecture today to a 64-bit architecture in a couple of years, maybe, and then to a thing called very long instruction word architecture by the end of the decade, and that it's going to be a painless transition for those customers, that the applications are just going to move easily. That's just nonsense. That is technologically not true. They are saying that they're going to work with Intel to bring out an integrated circuit that will have leadership performance while at the same time being backward compatible with two completely different architectures, PA RISC and x86 architecture. That's nonsense. I mean, these are just technical nonsense. Now, when a company is riding high like HP, the press just writes down, oh yeah, they said it must be true. You know, they said it must be true. Anti-gravity works, yeah, I believe it. It's nonsense. But unless we challenge that nonsense, they don't stop to examine it. We've got to challenge it. I was talked to Scott McNeely at Sun Microsystems. I know all these people, and we're all good friends in that, even though we are competitors, right? Scott had been very successful last decade in his business. At our expense, I think 3/4 of Sun Microsystems sales came out of digital accounts because we didn't have the performance in our workstations. We didn't invest in RISC technology. In fact, we killed our program. But we fixed that problem now. Now Scott McNeely's products have less than half the performance of digital's products. And he's got a problem there. But he also built his company with excellent marketing. He told customers that if you buy Unix, your applications will move easily to any other platform on Unix. It turns out that that's not true, is it? In fact, it also turns out that when they tried to move their customers from Solaris 1, which was based on the Berkeley kernel, to their latest Solaris 2, which is based on System 5, they have had enormous trouble making it happen. And both of those Unix systems are their own. Today, most of their customer base remains on Solaris 1 and is frustrated. And yet, their Unix, in fact, maintains much higher margins than we do because it's essentially a proprietary implementation of Unix. Now, at Uniform this last March, I was invited to be the CEO speaker about the CEO perspective. Can you imagine the CEO of Digital Equipment giving a speech on the values of Unix to our customers, which I did. And I pointed out that Digital's Unix today is more compliant with industry-accepted open standard Spec 1170 than any other implementation of Unix. And just recently, by the way, you probably saw the Gartner report or the D.H. Brown report, where independent analysis of our Unix versus all of the competitors, D.H. Brown said we were the absolute leader with a modern second-generation microkernel implementation of Unix with the features that customers want and the only one with 64 bits. We need to tell somebody. And when we hear some nonsense from these others, we need to challenge it. You need the information so you don't have to be bashful about it, and we don't need to apologize for anything. Our technology, our support is first rate. Our people are excellent, and we meet our commitments. Other questions? Yes.
Yeah, Bob, my name is T.K. Paulson. I'm account executive for Top 1000 account. Please describe the principle that would govern the interplay between competences and resources, referring to account management, system integration and consulting, and marketing industry. And in the future, where will the resources reside?
That issue has to do with the way that it is implemented in each territory, and it's not the same in every territory, but it will be what's appropriate to the country. For example, what's appropriate to a relatively smaller country is maybe not the same thing as you would have in one of the largest industrialized companies.
Please flip this over, rewind to the beginning of side B.